Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Hello, good morning. How are you? Hope you are all very well. On the programme between now and 12, Russia declares grain ships in the Black Sea to be legitimate military targets. We speak to a global food security expert about the consequences. How a torn-up letter sheds light on the final days of the couple found dead in their Clonmel home. Debunking misconceptions, myths and old wives' tales about the natural world with Dr. Shane Bergen. And Paul Rouse will look ahead and look back at Sunday's hurling final and the greatest teams of yesterday. And the Friday gathering is going to be here to discuss all of the big stories of the week. Text us this morning on 51551. You can also email todaycb@rte.ie. Unprovoked attacks in our city centres, primarily the capital, of course, are back in focus after that brutal assault on a 57-year-old American tourist in Dublin on Wednesday night. He was attacked, beaten and kicked by a group of youths on Store Street, and Gardaí believe that his injuries are going to be life-changing. Out of control, says one security source in the Irish Independent. People are terrified. They've stopped coming into town to socialise, says Sinn Féin councillor Janice Boylan on Morning Ireland earlier this morning. Fianna Fáil's Jim O'Callaghan has spoken about lawlessness in Dublin. In a moment, I'm going to be speaking to criminologist Trina O'Connor. First, though, I'm joined by Jack Woolley, whom many of you will know as an Olympian in Taekwondo. But he was also randomly attacked in Dublin while on a night out in 2021 in a similar incident to this week's assault. And he joins me on the line now. Jack, very good morning to you and thanks very much for taking our call. Take me back to that night 2 years ago, please. Where were you?
Yeah, so I was out in town with a couple of friends and we just got up for a meal. We went from the south side, walked over to the north side to get a taxi just along the boardwalk, and we were kind of on the path rather than the actual boardwalk itself. So just walking down, I'm not too sure of the name of the bridge, but we were just kind of walking along that road trying to flag a taxi down. And then that's when things seemed to take a turn down there.
How many of them were there?
So I would roughly say there was about 8 to 10 people on the street. Kind of, they were causing a bit of noise, and we didn't think anything of it, and continued to walk. And unfortunately, then that group of people went on to attack myself and I'd say about 6 or 7 others.
What sort of ages were they?
I'd say they were probably just a little bit older myself, I'd say like mid to late 20s.
If you had to speculate, if you had to make a guess, would you say that they had drink or drugs taken, or do you think they were sober?
I don't think they were sober. Definitely with the way they were acting and the noise of them and just the way that they kind of ran off afterwards and then to continue to attack other people, they definitely weren't sober.
What did they do to you?
So I had one person just come from behind me. I turned around and I just got one punch in the face. It split my top lip, looked down, blood everywhere. And then he continued to run off with the rest of them and attack other people then. So I made my way to a safer place, managed to ring an ambulance, and then luckily there was a group of people who were kind of like making sure if I was all right, my friends and a few other random people, and there was a Garda car passing then a couple of minutes later, so they were able to stop, look after me and wait for the ambulance to come.
When you say blood everywhere, I know we all typically say that when we're injured, but it really was the case that there was blood all the way down your front, even soaking your trousers from an injury from your mouth.
Yeah, no, it was pretty horrific. Like people, I remember after it, people weren't too happy that they thought people were taking photos of me. But when I looked down, I just saw so much blood, and I actually made my friends take the picture of me that most people would have seen in the media. Like, it wasn't anything negative. Nobody was like saying anything. I just wanted to have a look for myself to see how bad it was.
Have a record of it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it was pretty bad.
Why was the injury so bad? Had this guy something in his hand when he hit you?
Yeah, so when I got hit, I felt like a metal part hit off my top tooth. So whether it was something extra in his hands, like a set of keys or like a knuckle duster or something, it was definitely not just a normal punch. Like, this was just one shot and completely like opened my lip. I ended up having to get over 25 stitches then.
Good Lord. And did he say anything to you as he did this?
So at the time now, I've tried to shut it out now, I wouldn't be able to quote it exactly, but it was something along the lines of, oh, sorry, I didn't mean it, like, wrong person, and then he like left. So, but it didn't really make sense to me at the time. Okay. If they went on to consider and attack other random people, you know, like I was in a shared ambulance with a couple of others who had also sustained injuries from the same group of people. So for them to say something like that was a bit like, it didn't make any sense.
Jack, so, I think it's actually part of the crack of the game. Something very similar happened to me a number of years ago. I was hit with the heel of somebody's hand, ran up my chin, my mouth and my nose. And as he walked on away from me, said, oh, didn't mean to hit you, sorry. So I think
in a way it's kind of to make themselves like feel a little bit better, or in a way kind of feel like they can get away with it, you know.
There were a number of people who said, good God, if somebody like Jack Woolley, a man who plays taekwondo at an Olympic level, can't look after himself in a situation like that, what hope for the rest of us? I suppose, though, you probably never even thought about using your skills in that situation, did you?
No, definitely not. Like I said, as soon as it happened, I just assessed the situation. Did I have the time to move? Did I have time to get away? I looked down, seeing the amount of blood, I just kind of went into a bit of panic. It wasn't like, it was more shocked than anything else. Like, to fight back would have been stupid. You never know. They could have had a knife, which unfortunately I think they might have then. And like, there was a group of them. I was with two female friends of mine who, you know, I wanted to make sure that they weren't going to get attacked, and they were okay. Because also part of the group, there was girls. So, you know, maybe the men might not have gone for them, but, you know, there was nothing stopping the other girls attacking them. So I thought that literally the straightaway instinct was get out of there and make sure that myself and my friends were safe.
I know, absolutely right. Has it changed your feelings about going out in town?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I tried to stay away as much as possible, unless I'm with a group of people, like a bigger group, that I'll feel a little bit more safe. But even during the day, you're walking down the road and you're in town and somebody even just goes to step off the curb to go past you because there's not much walking space, and or somebody's running past you, you do feel that initial panic or shock. Unfortunately, I thought, because I didn't have any like straightaway mental issues with the whole event, I tried to go back into town there just a couple of weeks after the event had happened during the day, and even like little old women walking past me was like, it was very startling for me. And you know, it's gone away a little bit with time, but you know, it's never fully gone. Sudden movements and stuff like that are very triggering, really? Especially in the places that this has happened, you know.
And was it triggered, were these memories triggered by the news of the assault on the 57-year-old American tourist?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I didn't hear much about it until I was talking to my parents, and they just said it's happened again. And, you know, it's happened a lot recently, you know. Unfortunately, I think it's kind of become like a bit of not old news, but, you know, it's not shocking news. You know, it's happening that often that I'm not surprised, but you get used to hearing about it, which is unfortunate. I don't like saying that, like, because of course, it's a very serious situation, but it's happening that regularly, and it's starting to just, you know, people are hearing it once, hearing it twice, and they're not surprised anymore.
No, indeed, they're not. Jack Woolley, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. I'm joined on the line now by Trina O'Connor, criminologist and co-host of the Real Lives Untold podcast. Trina, there's nothing isolated about what Jack Woolley is relating there any longer. Can you offer any insight into why it is that people do what this guy did to Jack Woolley? Why do people like this feel untouchable?
I think because the way we handle you, Justice Philip, is that for many of these young people, they get a slap on the wrist. So what we're doing within our criminal justice system with young people that are guilty of these kind of violent acts is not good enough, simply. We need to have zero tolerance to violent crime. And when we have young people guilty of violent crime, we need to rehabilitate them within a prison setting or within custodial settings. So prison or custodial situations should not be a criminal education for these young people. But for many, it is. For many, it's an apprenticeship into a career in criminality. So we're not looking at the, holistic approach of looking at what's going on for a young person who's lashing out against society. We're also, in a lot of ways, ignoring the mental health crisis that we see within young people because of the COVID pandemic. So for young people who became adolescents during that COVID, during lockdowns, who actually don't know how to behave within society, who may come from a family that's in crisis, we have to support families that are in crisis. It is so complex, Philip. But we have the resources there. We just need to join them up and need to get them working.
It is unimaginably complex, Katrina, because there are so many people whose families and who they themselves are in crisis, but they don't choose to go out and do things like this to people like Jack Woolley. What is it that pushes people that extra step to go and take steps like this?
So it's the types of crisis that people are in. So when you have increases in poverty, research shows us that within an increase in poverty, you will see an increase in violence, particularly in young people, because young people, that angst of adolescence, look at other people who have more than them, and when they have less than, they want to kick out at the world. So they're sending us a message, you know, I'm in pain, therefore everybody else is going to be in pain. But the reality of this group within the inner city of Dublin is this group have been going, carrying on like this for a substantial period of time, and the Gardaí know who they are. So the issue that I have is when we get them young people, it's what we do with them when we do charge them with these kind of violent. That's the piece that's really missing.
Yeah, but I have to put the other side of the argument to you, though, that there is something to be said for not criminalising somebody who has gone out and who has once or twice done something stupid and assaulted somebody in an unprovoked way like this, because you are putting them into a criminal justice system that will educate them to further crime and that will probably mark out the destination of the rest of their life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I advocate for treating young people with compassion and all of them things. However, there are certain issues that we can't not criminalise a young person. A violent attack like this, violence perpetrates violence. So that's why we need to get them custodial, and we need to be ensuring that before they leave custody, that they have done anger management, that they have been involved in a restorative process, because we then will educate them. But if we just give them a slap on the hand and they end up racking up charges after charges, then we're doing them a disservice because we are enabling bad behaviour. So there is an argument, and I would totally advocate about not criminalising young people for lots of things. For example, our drugs policy is not working, and you know, I would advocate for decriminalisation. So there are lots of ways that we need to keep young people, net widen them, keep them out of the criminal justice system. But when you have this level of violence, Philip, we cannot allow young people to get away with it, because we're giving them the message that they will continue. And thankfully, the man, it now sounds like, is going to be okay, but he might have life-changing injuries, but they may as well have murdered him. And within that gang, there was three boys and three girls witnessing that, and that troubles me. So, you know, in the past when you would see situations like this, if there was girls around, usually within small gangs like that, the girls would intervene. But there's no stopping this group of young men, and the Gardaí know who they are. And we can't have this conversation without not speaking about the crisis in An Garda Síochána. We have to see more boots on the ground. We have to see the Garda policing our streets.
Well, do we have to see changes in the way that they are deployed as well? I mean, the Community Garda scheme was an initiative that was always praised to the hilt, and the small area policing initiatives were one that also seemed to yield results in the past.
Yeah, them targeted responses are so successful. And I just scratch my head sometimes and go, when something's working, why is it stopped, you know? Small area policing in that area, and I've worked in that area for a number of years now, that area there, when small area policing was there, was very, very successful. And community policing, that is key. It is the relationship that Gardaí build with young people that stop these kind of things escalating, because they can intervene. But on top of that, Philip, we need to look at the youth service and the youth sector and collaborate them on Garda Síochána. And there's been a huge amount of money put into that area through the NEIC task force. To me, it's like, why are these processes of these collaboration pieces not being joined up? Like, you've got, I think it's 40 less Gardaí in Store Street from the time when I walked in there during the task force set up. Like, what's going on there? And if there is Gardaí there and they're behind desks, you need to get them out from their desks.
The government would say that it's a recruitment problem that arose as a result of COVID, and they say that they're going to address it by getting the numbers up to 15,000 by the end of this year. Whether they're successful in that or not is another thing.
Yeah.
I wonder that, just on a final question, Trina, to what extent is COVID and the disengagement from schools and during that period of lockdown also partly responsible for this? Do you think it's a factor?
I think it's a factor, but I think we need to be honest and accept and acknowledge that there's parts of the country that always suffer from these type of antisocial behaviours. I think it may be a factor, but I think there's much more going on. It's families in crisis. It's intergenerational. Yeah. It's behaviours that have been acceptable. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, yeah, absolutely, COVID had an effect on so many young people's schools being closed. But they don't have to be collateral damage. We can sort this out if we join all the services together, join the dots.
Trina O'Connor, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.